I'm Dan Roderick's, and this is Midday. 10 grams of pot and 10-10 an hour. In this year's General Assembly, 10 seemed to be the operative number with Maryland legislators who voted to decriminalize the possession of small quantities of marijuana and to gradually increase the minimum wage. The 2014 General Assembly session is over, and we take a look at what state lawmakers accomplished or didn't in the first hour of today's show. I'm joined by Frazier Smith, WIPR senior news analyst, and Aaron Cox, statehouse reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Also, an update on Governor O'Malley's first round of bill signings from WIPR's Chris Connolly. The phone lines will be open for listeners to comment on the new laws and to ask questions you might have about them. Midday Politics after the news from NPR. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Welcome back. Dan Roderick's here on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City and the Eastern Shore, and streaming live online at WYPR.org. It's Tuesday. It's Politics Day on Midday. Both our hours of our show for political junkies. In the second hour of our show today, authors of a new book about Hillary Clinton, HRC, those are her initials, HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Rodham Clinton, a new book by Jonathan Allen, who covers the White House for Bloomberg News, and Amy Parnes, who's the senior White House correspondent for The Hill. They'll be joining us in the second hour of our show today. Up front, we talk about the Maryland legislature. Last night, the legislature celebrated sine die, the end of the 2014 General Assembly session. Over 90 days, lawmakers considered some 2,600 bills, ranging from hunting laws to gender rights. Of the bills that made it to the governor's desk this year, there are a few standouts that we'll be talking about in this hour of the show and like to get your opinions on. Maryland will join 16 other states in decriminalizing possession of small amounts of marijuana, citing uneven enforcement and the need to focus on more substantial criminal activity. Governor O'Malley stated that he plans to sign this bill, which will remove jail time as a potential punishment for possessing less than 10 grams of pot. Also of note is Maryland's minimum wage. The bill that passed will gradually increase the state's minimum wage from $7.25 an hour now to $10.10 an hour by the year 2018. That's 4 years from now. Advocates see the bill as a victory, but the slow implementation of the increase has some wondering if it will be effective in combating the widening income gap. So we'd like to hear from you on those two counts in this hour of the show. How do you think marijuana decriminalization will help the state? Is this a step towards legalization, full legalization? And if so, is that a good thing? 410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. Open phone lines in this hour of the show. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. Will the gradual minimum wage hike help the state, help workers in the state? Republicans in the legislature fear that an increase in minimum wage might send small businesses elsewhere. Do you think that's true? Or do you think that the bill goes far enough in easing poverty, $10.10 an hour by 2018? Give us a call or write us an email. Joining us for the discussion today to wrap up the General Assembly is a woman who's covered the General Assembly for the Baltimore Sun, my colleague from Calvert Street, Aaron Cox, who covers the State House in Maryland politics. Aaron, nice to have you on the show again.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Thanks.
And C. Frazier Smith is with us, WYPR senior news analyst, columnist for the Daily Record, and a man who has some of the nicest sweaters in the world. Nice to see you, Frazier.
Dan, you're well brought out yourself.
Thank
Dan.
You very much. You like my sweater today?
Oh, yeah. It's very trendy.
Thank you very much. WYPR's State House reporter, Christopher Connolly, is with us by phone. We'll start with him. Chris, thank you again for joining us.
Happy to be here.
His first legislative session in Maryland, Chris Connolly. So, Chris, what's going on today? This is the day after.
It's the day after. So, you know, the legislators just spent 90 days passing hundreds of laws, and they all have to be signed. So today is the governor's first signing ceremony. It's him set up on the second floor of the State House next to the Speaker of the House, Mike Bush, and Senate President Mike Miller. And they are working through a bunch of the bills. They're not going to sign all of them today. He has until May 27th to sign all of the legislation that was passed this session. Today they're doing department bills. The top of the agenda was an education bill, a pre-kindergarten expansion bill.
What exactly does that call for?
So that calls for it puts $4.3 million more into making pre-kindergarten programs more accessible to low-income families, kids. We'll enroll about 1,600 3- and 4-year-olds in full-time pre-K programs.
Okay. And anything else on the governor's agenda today?
I believe it's pretty much this. You know, they work through. They have people lined up. You should really see it. They have people, you know, kind of lined up to go, all the people who, you know, worked on getting it passed, people who advocated for all the different bills, and they just sort of work them through one at a time. They take a picture, they sign the things, he hands off the pens, and then they bring out the next group for the next bill.
Chris, how did you enjoy your first session covering the Maryland legislature? Or maybe you didn't. How did it go down there?
It was a lot of fun. You know, it's a different language that's spoken down here almost. You know, it's fun kind of trying to figure out all the different procedural things that happen and what they actually mean. So
yeah.
It was a good time.
They pack a lot into 90 days.
They really do. They really do.
Well, Chris, you did a great job, and we thank you for today's update and your other updates on the Midday Weekly Review. Thank you.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Chris Connolly, WYPR's news staff who covers the legislature. Aaron Cox, what else is on the governor's agenda for today? Chris mentioned the pre-K signing of that, the additional money for the expansion of pre-K.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that one of the bills on the list resolves a situation that came up first in 2012 with pit bulls when the state's highest court declared them an inherently dangerous dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that sparked a lot of concern about whether landlords could kick out tenants with pit bulls, about whether pit bulls owners were being unfairly targeted. And this issue has kind of went on for about a year and a half before the legislature finally came up with a solution that made everybody happy, and essentially that made put a tougher standard of liability on all dog owners. So if your dog bites someone, you're essentially responsible.
Thank you for that. And before we turn to marijuana decriminalization and minimum wage, which I want to talk about in this hour of the show and encourage our listeners to call on, I wanted to ask Aaron Cox about the House of Cards film tax credit that was in before the legislature. This is, of course, the Netflix production company that's been here for a couple of seasons for the production of House of Cards. Question about whether they'll come back. They've already received some money from the state, and the legislature was asked again to provide tax credits. Could you update us on that?
Right. So House of Cards began filming, has filmed two seasons here, and over the course of those seasons, the state has given them $26 million in taxpayer money to help defray the cost of filming here in Maryland. And it's a very popular program among lawmakers, and apparently very popular with House of Cards as well. So this year, the governor decided not to put quite as much money into that tax incentive. He spread around cash to other sorts of tax incentives. And House of Cards was originally told they'd get about $4 million. Now, last year, they got $15 million. So their production company wrote a letter to lawmakers essentially threatening to pick up and leave if they didn't get more cash, which sparked quite an interesting turn of events down in Annapolis, which involved actor Kevin Spacey, who is the lead character, plays the scheming Frank Underwood in the Netflix show.
He plays a congressman in
yes.
the Netflix show. He played a lobbyist in real life in the legislature, right?
Exactly,
so
right.
So how did they respond to what's the bottom line then? Just $4 million?
Well, the bottom line is that really late last night, 20 minutes before the General Assembly can be adjourned for the year, there were six lawmakers in the back lounge arguing about whether or not to give another $3.5 million into the pot of money that can go to film companies. And the fight was essentially over whether it would whether putting language in the bill that allowed the state to kind of take back money if a company did actually pack up and leave. And the House wanted to have that in there as protection. The Senate thought that it would discourage film industry from working here in Maryland. And they argued it down to the very last minute of the General Assembly. We had senators running onto the floor of the House of the Delegates with a conference committee, putting it in front of a chairwoman to sign. She just wouldn't do it. And so at the end of the day, because they couldn't agree on that language, it took $3.5 million out of the pot of money available for the film industry. So there's still $15 million in there. There's still a lot of money.
But it wouldn't all go to House of Cards necessarily.
No, the Department of Business and Economic Development decides where that cash goes. And there's a lot of other companies that film in Maryland.
The amendment,
Deep, for instance.
The amendment that you just mentioned did not get in there then?
No.
Okay.
No.
Frazier, I want to turn to you, then we'll go to the phone lines. Aaron Cox from The Sun, Frazier Smith from WYPR with us in this hour of the show. Again, our number 410-662-8780. So the 2014 legislature of Maryland, the General Assembly session, it's election year. They increased the minimum wage. The governor wanted it to go to $10.10 an hour by 2016. They stretched it out to 2018. Is that the major accomplishment of this session? What did we say about that specifically, about the session overall?
Well, traditionally, a year like this would not be a big year down there because nobody wants to do anything that the voter actually remembers when when he goes into the polls. So they don't want to make anybody mad. So, but they may have done a little bit more than they normally do. I mean, the minimum wage thing is significant. Although, Dan, you've raised this point, and others have. How democratic are we really? How
dominant are the Democrats in this state?
No, how blue is the Dem? No,
how
they're,
blue
they're
is
dominant.
The state?
They're very dominant.
In numbers, but, they are, yeah.
Yes, well, that's the way they vote. So, but do they spend much of the capital? I mean, you have a legislature down there that was unwilling to index the cost of living increases. I mean, we understand that because no legislature wants to encumber the future, you know, or to limit its own flexibility. So, I mean, that's why it happens. But meanwhile, people are still going to be working even in 2018. Is that right?
Yeah,
they're still going to be working poor.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, you would think that maybe there would be more than just Delegate Mazur who's saying we ought to go to $18 or $17, whatever the number was.
$16, I think. I can't remember. $16.70, maybe.
Now, yeah. You know, she's trying to get some attention to herself as a candidate for governor. We understand that. But still, I mean, you know, where is somebody who's saying that we really ought to be addressing the fact that so many of us are working, we have jobs, we're not lazy, we're looking for jobs, and we can't get paid enough to feed our families? I mean, does this get us to the poverty level? I haven't looked at those numbers, so I don't recall.
Aaron?
Well, the 10-10 figure was established by advocates across the country as what we would need, people would need to earn to be able to have the same earning power as they did back in, I believe it was 1968 in the late 60s when the minimum wage had kind of, it was its strongest point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's would be 10-10 today would get you back to where that was. So 10-10 in July 2018.
Yeah.
4 years from now, it still won't have the buying power. I mean, it'll have a lot more than $7.25.
What made that compromise? I guess that's a compromise. What made them stretch it out to 2018?
A lot. You know, it's not a short answer. There's a couple different factors at play. A lot of the lawmakers from rural parts of the state just thought that businesses couldn't handle it. That small businesses, if you gave them an increase that went too high too quickly, that businesses would just shut down, that the economic recovery wasn't quite that strong. And then another piece of it was that...
The original proposal was 2 years from now, mm-hmm. not 4 years from now.
There's, exactly.
It wasn't immediate. That's
no,
all.
It
That's
was
all
ne- yeah, it was yeah. never immediate. It okay. was always going to be gradual. And then another piece of it is that some of the advocates for the developmental disability community have Senator Middleton, chair of the Finance Committee, as their champion. This is an issue that's very important to him, that's very personal to him.
These are for workers, folks who are assigned to work with the developmentally disabled.
Exactly. And they were concerned that if you raise the minimum wage, that the difference between what people can earn flipping burgers at McDonald's and what people can earn spending 12 hours a day caring for a developmentally disabled person would be so small that no one would take those more difficult but very necessary jobs to care for people with developmental disabilities. So in order to strike a compromise and come up with some state cash to help pay those folks more, they pushed out the entire implementation of the minimum wage bill by even more.
So
time.
do they get more money for the workers of the folks who work with the development?
Yeah, absolutely. They absolutely do. It's roughly $30 million a year. It doesn't kick in immediately. And there's also a provision in there that makes sure moving forward, those workers make at least 30 to 35% more than the minimum wage.
Aaron Cox from the Baltimore Sun, Fraser Smith from WYPR on the Daily Record. We'll take our short break here, our first short break here. Come right back and take some phone calls. How do you feel about POTS decriminalization in Maryland? What about the minimum wage here? $10.10 an hour. 4 years from now, is that what you expected from the democratic controlled legislature of Maryland? What do you think of that? Is this compromise? Is the best we can do? 410-662-8780. I'll be right back. Frank, one of our frequent emailers from Carroll County in Hampstead, Frank says, it is about time that the minimum wage was raised. My objection is how long it will take to raise rise to the maximum level. Frank, you're doing fine. I'm not today. You're doing fine with your prose. By the time it reaches 10.10 an hour, it will not be enough to help someone get out of poverty, and we will have to revisit the issue almost immediately to adjust this again. As to the Republican contention that jobs will leave the state, what a lot of hogwash. There is no proof that this happens. If you look at states and cities that have higher minimum wages, San Francisco and New Jersey, for example, there has been no stampede of businesses leaving New Jersey or San Francisco. On the issue of pot, Patrick's comment, pot is a gateway drug. It's a gateway to prison for the thousands of Marylanders who have committed nonviolent acts. Decriminalization is a step forward in righting our misdirected criminal justice system. The email address for Midday, wypr.org, midday at. Aaron Cox, I'll go to you. What did the governor have to say? He was not so much in favor of decriminalization of marijuana possession in January, for all of his political career, as far as we know, when he was mayor and as governor. So he says he plans to sign this particular bill.
Right. So, O'Malley has kind of not very directly answered whether he thinks decriminalization is a good idea or not. When you ask him about legalization, he's very clear that he thinks states shouldn't be part of this laboratory of, experiment on whether legalizing marijuana is a good idea. And decriminalization, he doesn't directly answer the question. And even yesterday when he announced that he planned to sign the bill, he still didn't say whether or not he thought it was a good idea. Instead, he phrased it in terms of acknowledging the way the public feels about this offense and acknowledging the way that courts and prosecutors are treating the offense and that most people who get charged with marijuana possession don't end up going to jail, don't end up seeing anything really more than probation. And so him signing this bill was, an acknowledgement of that reality.
Let's go to the phone lines and hear from our listeners on this. Aaron Cox, who covers the State House and Maryland politics for the Baltimore Sun, and C. Fraser Smith, familiar to all our WYPR listeners as the senior news analyst here and a columnist with the Daily Record. To Towson, Lee is our first caller. We welcome you. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Okay, Lee.
Hey, I just wanted to comment upon the legislation concerning the decriminalization of marijuana. I'm coming to you definitely from the right side of center politically, and I will say that I feel that Maryland is a overly liberal state. However, I think this is the right move. I think it's so silly to take people who have committed nonviolent drug offenses for small amounts of marijuana to put them in the criminal justice system, clogging it up. These folks are going to be tainted for life in terms of their employability, likely leading to the taxpayers having to foot the bill for benefits because they're never really able to achieve a full level of employment if they had a clean record. We're talking about a substance that's arguably less addictive than nicotine and alcohol. And again, as a conservative, I have to agree. I think this is the right move.
Do you stop there, Lee? What about next time legalization? What if we had an effort in the legislature that looked pretty serious toward full legalization?
Well, ultimately, again, talking about Maryland politics and spending and taxing and whatnot, I think they're going to have to look at it from that angle. That's a comment and perhaps for a separate time.
Okay, it sounds like you're noncommittal on legalization. I don't think this is something we're going to have to worry about in Maryland, because I don't see it happening. In the states where it has happened, Colorado and Washington, those were citizen-originated initiatives that got onto ballots out there, and we don't have that process in Maryland for a citizen initiative to get on a referendum. The only time we can get a question on a referendum is when there's a petition to challenge something the legislature has done. So, if the we need the legislature to pass a bill legalizing marijuana.
Exactly. There's a couple other things that happened in Washington and Colorado before they got to that point. They also had decriminalization, and they also had very robust medical marijuana programs, which is something that Maryland still does not have. And
there was some progress made in that realm, was there not, in this session of the legislature?
Absolutely. The way they created the medical marijuana program in Maryland last year when they approved it for the first time was a very, I would use the word timid approach, where they relied on academic centers to stand up and volunteer to administer a drug that at this time the federal government had not, at that time the federal government had not said they would not go after people for administering. And so, none of the universities volunteered. They didn't want to jeopardize their federal funding. They didn't step up to the plate to do it. So just yesterday, the final deal was struck. And now physicians can go to the Medical Marijuana Commission and get a special license and recommend it. And Maryland is also going to be in the very interesting position of creating a medical marijuana industry, of finding growers, licensing growers, setting up dispensaries, and all of that is on the horizon. And
there'll be some pot farming in Maryland.
There will
legal
be some pot
farming.
Yes.
Correct. Fraser Smith.
Well, it's another issue where I think the state's blue progressive image is a bit undercut when you look at the record and the way they approach things. And then, and again, it's not horrible that we in Annapolis, the people in Annapolis, tend to be sort of incremental in their approach to things. I mean, bills heard in the first year are not likely to go anywhere, particularly ones that are pretty ambitious. And I think part of what's going on, I'm just guessing, I haven't heard anyone say this, but I think our legislative and our leaders and our governor don't want to get too out in front on this, because they know what has happened in the past to people like Kurt L. Schmoke, who was the mayor of Baltimore and called for medicalization of drugs and of marijuana.
At the beginning of a discussion of decriminalization in 1988.
Well,
right.
It was
a little before his time, right?
It was, well,
I guess.
Well, it was an issue on the street, and people were getting criminal records, the same kind of arguments that were made this year, for things that really were not getting cured in the criminal justice system. So let's talk about dealing with it as, a health problem. But repeatedly, when people reported it, they talked about legalization. The distinction was lost.
Right.
And I think it hurt Schmoke. Who knows where he would have gone anyway,
right,
politically.
People
but
didn't get that distinction between
exactly
decriminalization and legalization, full legalization. Dan in Charlesville, let's hear your comment on this. Thanks for calling Midday.
Yes, I love your program. One thing I want to make your listeners aware of, they only decriminalized 10 grams, which is about 10 joints, which is about a third of an ounce. If you have more than a third of an ounce on you, you're still going to face up to a year in prison. So I think the legislature didn't really go very far. I looked up last night. Some states, is 1 ounce is decriminalized, a half an ounce, a third of an ounce is a small amount.
I can give you so many examples of the Maryland legislature being afraid. What was the word? Timid, middling. I don't know what you want to call it. Afraid to take, not even a giant step, just a medium-sized step. They take all these little steps. Look at medical marijuana is a perfect example of that.
Amen.
Yeah. Anyway, Dan.
Exactly. And the other part I want to make is that, maybe people are not, in our circle in Baltimore City going to prison for smoking a joint. But, there's a woman that I met this past fall. She's probably crying in my arms that her 20-something-year-old son's going to be facing 90 days in prison in another county. They're much more draconian, enforcing the law about smoking marijuana in other counties. I don't think people realize that, because we're coming from Baltimore, and we all know people, someone who smokes a joint once in a while, and, think twice about it. But so it's an unequal, application of a law.
Oh, absolutely. I'm curious. I'm dying to ask you what county that was, Dan.
I believe it was one of the rural counties. I honestly don't remember. It was one of the rural counties.
All right.
And the other thing is that, you know, with the minimum wage law, I would like the assembly and the Senate, Maryland Assembly and Senate, to put their, you know, when they raise their salaries on a 4-year program. I mean, that's so outrageous. I'm so embarrassed when you see the details of the raising of the minimum wage. You know, that's how they're going to go about it in a 4-year, you know, over a 4-year period when it's at $7.25 an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is just beyond belief.
Thank you, Dan. Meanwhile, raising the exemption for estate taxes in Maryland to nearly $6 million over a similar period, over 4 years. That also passed in the legislature. Kevin says about pot decriminalization, it's a step in the right direction. I'm surprised the governor doesn't endorse legalizing pot. If the state regulated sales, there would be tons of tax dollars pouring in and lots of money saved by not prosecuting and jailing people. Well, that's all a lot of common sense there, but I don't see it happening, Frazier. I don't see politicians anywhere in the country really voting to legalize a controlled dangerous substance, marijuana. I don't see it. I mean, I understand the Citizens Initiative, Washington and Colorado. That made sense to me. I can't see it happening by a vote of a legislature. Anywhere.
Dan, you know, who knows what will happen.
Lifetime.
I mean, I think that, you know, again, the people are a bit out in front of their leaders.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see. Here's Adrian in Pikesville calling about the minimum wage increase. Adrian, you're on Midday. Next, hi.
How are you doing, guys? I'm calling because I believe this topic was interesting. I want to put a little input on my end.
Okay.
Well, for example, on my end, I'm a second-generation immigrant to this country who came here seeking for opportunities and all. And I am a young entrepreneur having 12 people working under me. And this kind of makes a big impact. Yes, everybody's talking about how great this is going to be, and I agree. I mean, having a more valuable dollar will have more valuable payout whenever the labor comes in. Yes, it's great. But what about the business owners? It's obvious how is it going to affect the business owners. What about the prices increase? We already struggle with enough competition with companies that are working illegally. For example, in my industry, that is development and construction, we already have so many companies that are working unlawfully without licensing, without insurance, hiring all illegal immigrants to save a buck. What are we going to do? How are we going to make sure that everybody's playing by the book and, you know, it's equally? If we're going to pay the minimum wage that is fair, yes, we as business owners should have an equal and fair treat. What do you think?
For Adrian, I think if you know of someone who's violating the law on wages, you ought to report them. Are you paying minimum wage now? Are you paying $7.25 or are you paying above that?
We are paying pretty much twice minimum wage because in the construction industry, as you know, it's one of the jobs that requires for you to pay your guys work. It's hard work. Not everybody wants to do it. Not everybody wants to be working 10 hours a day. It's a hard job. So we try to pay the best we can so we can keep our guys.
Well, also, excuse me, Adrian, for you personally, your business, what is your issue then?
My issue is that whenever I try to recruit new people to keep growing my business, of course they're going to request for a higher pay and not necessarily bringing a more educated. I think the main concern is having more educated labor force to come in and jump. If they're going to require a better pay, you know, like starting at $20, $25 an hour because now they have the excuse that their minimum wage is $10.10. Yes, I agree. We should pay them better. But don't you think it should be more educated labor at the same time? They should implement some sort of...
Let me just say a little bit. On the educated labor, that's a separate issue to what you're saying. You're saying you expect there to be some carryover expectation that if the wage goes to $10.10 an hour, by the way, you have 4 years to prepare for this, that it will affect the wages that you're paying your workers now, that those who are making $12.50 or $15 an hour now will expect more because the base has been raised. Well, you know, Adrian, I don't know what to say if that's true or not. I don't have the economic research in front of me to say whether that in fact happens or not. I know that if you do the math on $7.25 an hour, somebody who works a 40-hour week for 50 weeks a year, or it's not much money. It's not even what the federal government calls poverty in the United States. Government trying to do something about that and giving businesses, I guess, more time to prepare for it at 10:10 per hour.
You know, it's almost as if the lobbying instruction book says, whatever your issue is, claim that the people that you're working for will leave. The movie guys are going to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
and businesses in general are going to leave,
and elderly people who want to leave $5 million to their children will leave unless you can raise.
And millionaires are going to leave.
Yeah, millionaires are leaving the state. Yeah, so this is a recurring theme in Annapolis.
Well, and actually, the advocates for raising the minimum wage predicted that this is exactly what would happen and why they thought we needed to raise the minimum wage, that if you increase how much the people at the bottom end of the spectrum will get paid, then they will continue to spend their paychecks, and people that are working for Adrian's construction company, instead of getting paid $16 an hour, would get paid $18 an hour, and they're this was the concept of, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships.
Right.
And exactly how the minimum wage was sold as a way to help income inequality in Maryland. Whether or not that will be actually the case, I am not well-versed enough in economics to say one way or the other, but that is certainly how it was sold.
The argument that it leads to more consumer spending and generally better for the regional economy.
It's a point that seems to me ought to come up more often in the conversations about the wealth gap. Where do people, you know, it's a consumer economy. If I'm going to buy your product, Dan, you might have to pay me a little more money. I mean, you know, what was the man's name was Ford, I think. That was his thought, wasn't it? He wanted everybody to be able to buy his car.
Workers, the people on his assembly line.
Right.
Yeah.
Where did that idea go?
Back to the subject of marijuana, decriminalization of pot up to 10 grams. This is Michael in Ellicott City. We welcome you to our show.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My whole idea here is that, first of all, my wife is stage 4B cancer. She's taking marijuana. It helps her. I'm totally for it. I personally don't take it. I personally don't have anything to do with it, nor do I want to at this point, but I would like to direct people to look back at the facts. In the 20s and 30s, the DuPont family got real keen on their new hydrocarbon making ropes and making, you know, wartime commodities and that kind of thing. So they started the whole smear campaign against marijuana and hemp subsequently. So I think what we're all doing nowadays in the 21st century is arguing about the leaves of the tree, rather than that the whole tree is a farce in and of itself, a political farce by the DuPont family, who was just looking to line their pockets in general. And, you know, respectfully, your producer, when she was vetting me, said, "Is this a conspiracy theory?" And I said, "Well, if you look at the facts, it's not really a theory. It's what happened."
The DuPont family was involved in it.
DuPont Chemicals was involved back in World War One. Originally they were encouraging farmers to grow hemp for products to support the war effort. And then once DuPont came in and said, "We can use our petrochemicals to, you know, create ship rigging rope, to create, this, that, and the other," they had to say, okay, DuPont said, "What's our competition? It's hemp, because it grows so quickly and, it's a good, strong product."
Well, I'll make sure I'll read up a little bit more on that. I know that hemp is not produced in the United States for that reason, because marijuana is a controlled substance by the federal government, so it's not allowed in the United States. It is grown in Canada. Here's an email from Tom that says, "Hi, Dan. How much trouble will I be in if I grow one or two pot plants beside my tomatoes this year?"
Just as much as you would have been in last year?
Yeah, same as last year. My suggestion is, keep it inside, Tom. Keep it inside. Get yourself a good grow lamp. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here for midday. A short break. We'll be right back. Decriminalization of marijuana. If you're caught in possession of 10 grams or less, you merely get a fine, right? So there'll be no criminal prosecution of you. It's like paying a parking ticket or something.
Yeah, or a traffic ticket. I mean, it's not a small fine. It's $100, and it goes up with, you know, subsequent offenses. And if you get caught after your third time, you have to go see a judge. If you're under 21, you have to go see a judge. You might get sent to drug treatment, you know, court. So, I mean, it's still illegal, you know, the same way that speeding is illegal, that jaywalking is illegal, that all manner of things are illegal. But you're not going to go to jail if somebody searches your criminal record. It's not going to pop up as a drug possession charge.
Aaron Cox of the Baltimore Sun, Fraser Smith from WIPR. We're talking about the 2014 General Assembly session, which wrapped up last night, taking your phone calls on marijuana decriminalization, the increase in the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour by the year 2018. Also, the General Assembly resolving the issue over pit bull dogs and dog bites in general. Coming down to the wire here, making a decision about tax credits for House of Cards, the Netflix production in Maryland. 410-662-8780. We'll go to Andy in Baltimore and get his views on decriminalization here. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Good. As far as decriminalization is concerned, it's a, again, a broad brush statement, and I think it's misleading, and I think it'll be reacted on accordingly, as the woman just said. The penalties have been very harsh for minor possession, but it's still a drug, it's still illegal. The ramifications of folks starting with marijuana and using it in a responsible fashion has not proven to be the way it goes if we look back in history. The other problem that we ought to really consider is look at the data that Colorado put out 2 weeks ago. It's up to 50% of their DUIs now are marijuana-related offenses. You know, there may be an issue here, but I think the way we're going about it is the wrong way. I think we need to look at the, and not calling it decriminalization, but looking at what the court penalties are and the limits are there.
Okay.
It's like, you know, the problem we're having with the environment. Everybody calls it global warming. Well, then we have a cold winter, they say, we're not having global warming. You know, we're really talking about these issues in the wrong fashion and sometimes the wrong form.
Andy, before you go on, this 50% DUI in Colorado, where did you get that? I haven't seen that in the news.
That was on your station.
You heard that on an NPR report?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. Do you know how recent it was? Just in the last week?
Within the last 2 weeks.
Okay. I'll check that out. I haven't seen that. What else did you want to say? You wanted to comment on the minimum wage?
Yeah, I think the minimum wage, you know, a lot of the discussion here recently started with the Walmart issue and then the McDonald's issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're confusing minimum wage with the ability to buy houses. Minimum wage is a fair treatment for somebody, but it's not where they should be sustained for the rest of their life. If we continue to raise minimum wage, I think we're risking a sort of a disincentive program through minimum wages we are struggling with many of our social programs.
So you think people will be happy to at $10.10 an hour in the year 2018, and there'll be no incentive to move on beyond that?
I think we need to talk more about how to earn greater money through increasing your skills, trade schools, whatever it may be. But simply raising minimum wage that is broad brush applied to everybody, I don't think solves the problem.
Well, you realize that there's millions of jobs in the United States that are going to remain in place. Someone's going to have to do them in the service economy, especially whether people get educated or not and move on. Someone's going to be doing those jobs. And the question is, do you set a bare minimum below poverty, or do you try to aim to so those people who do those jobs can at least be out of poverty, according to our own federal government standards for that. I guess that's the question. Where do you base the minimum?
Well, and yeah. I think part of the debate has to be how many of the folks that get paid minimum wage, is this their sole job, or is it just because I have a lot of college kids that work for me that are happy to have it, and it's really temporary employment. And so minimum wage applies both to what might otherwise be full-time employment for some folks, as well as part-time employment.
$10.10 an hour,
but reduce the amount of opportunities that we have out there.
Okay, I mean, $10.10 an hour is roughly $21,000 a year if you work a full-time job over the course of a year, 4 years from now. So anyway, Frazier, did you want to say something?
I mean, the minimum wage and trying to have it keep pace to some extent with the economy is important because we know there are some people who are not going to move beyond it. That's going to be their reality. But I think that obviously down the road, what's important is to get more people qualified for the kinds of increased pay.
I'm totally with you. I guess I get what Andy's saying, but you know, what about everybody else who just someone still has to do those jobs, right?
Sure. And I don't think we're having a shortage of those. Although people realize that you know they need to get a high school diploma, their GED. They need to get beyond that if they can. And I would like to call some attention to the fact that the General Assembly started on this pre-kindergarten road with $4.3 million, which is not even a drop in the drop that goes into the bucket.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be an extremely expensive thing to do if we do it. But there's a lot of data that shows if you miss those years between 3 and 5, you really missed a lot. And I'm sure there was testimony to that effect down there before somebody made the decision that this is all we were going to be able to do this year.
Heather Mazira, a delegate from Montgomery County who's running for governor in the Democratic primary, has proposed legalizing marijuana in Maryland, taxing it, and using proceeds to further fund pre-K. Right, Erin?
Exactly. She, of the candidates running for governor, she has the most expansive program that would pay for pre-K for all Maryland four-year-olds all across the state, all-day pre-K for all of them, and half-day pre-K for three-year-olds in most parts of the state. And, you know, you mentioned the testimony in Annapolis. One of the things that I think is fascinating that some of the advocates talk about is the word gap, that the number of words that you hear as a child before you reach kindergarten is a very strong predictor of your later academic success and your ability to graduate from high school. And that the argument is that if you can capture all of those kids who aren't being spoken to at home, who aren't getting exposed to a lot of those things really early in life, and you invest that money, then you get a better return on investment than paying for the consequences of dropouts later down the road.
Well, the UK has programs like this throughout England. All throughout, they've been doing it for some time.
Let's take another call, Holly in Baltimore. Thank you for calling Midday.
Thank you. I want to bring up the issue of people who work with people that have developmental disabilities getting paid a certain amount. I agree that they should be paid well. I just don't understand how that part of the population is being separated from people who work in nursing homes or who work with small children. And I've worked both at McDonald's and with people who have developmental disabilities. And frankly, I'd much rather work not at McDonald's, you know. So I don't understand the logic of that. It sounds like I hate to be cynical, but it sounds like a very politically oriented situation.
Well, I don't know if that's cynical so much as an accurate observation of how this worked. You know, had the chairman of the Finance Committee, which is, you know, kind of a linchpin in moving this through the Senate, had this not been an issue that was very important to him, it would be unlikely that it was connected to the minimum wage debate at all. I mean, on the other hand, you mentioned, you know, why not talk about the pay for people who work for small children and other sorts of people who work, you know, in jobs that are very, very important and also very challenging. And I would say that, you know, the state of Maryland, through a long history it's not interesting enough to get into here, has an obligation to help pay to keep people with developmental disabilities in homes and help them. And so the state, it's the state's responsibility to pay these workers, and they already have a high turnover rate, and it's very difficult to keep them in jobs. And so, I mean, I suppose the point I'm trying to make here is that the developmental disability workers are people who are paid by the state, and the state would need to set aside additional funding to make sure that they make more than minimum wage. And that's why it became a relevant conversation that got enough traction, that it wasn't just politics, that Senator Middleton had a point that resonated with folks.
A question. Well, I'm sorry, Frazier.
Well, it's still a carve out, and I think the caller is right to question that. I mean, you know, how many other legitimate cases could you have made for other people that are working in the economy? I mean, what we're looking at here is the committee system and the power of the committee chairman.
And what about tip workers, restaurant employees? Dick wrote in with a question. What will be the Maryland minimum wage for restaurant employees, the ones who work for tips?
I believe it has been frozen at the rate it's currently at, which is roughly half of the minimum wage. I think it's about $3.63, somewhere
right
around there.
They did not change that.
They did not change that. There was proposals to change it. Like the other minimum wage, there was proposals to link it to inflation so that there would be future increases. But tipped workers will essentially stay where they are for now. And as the minimum wage continues to rise, I believe the tip workers won't also see a commensurate rise in their wages.
410-662-8780. Alan in Catonsville, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to speak to my wife and I are recent transplants. I'm a Maryland native, but we recently moved back here from Washington State. And so in some ways, I could speak to both of these issues, but I want to focus on the minimum wage. In Washington State right now, the minimum wage is, if I recall correctly, about $9.72, and has been for years. I don't know if you've followed the recent news out of SeaTac, Washington, but they just increased the minimum wage there to $15 an hour. It's currently that city now has, to my knowledge, the highest minimum wage of anywhere in the United States.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. We're short of time, Alan, so go ahead.
Okay. Now, you know, Washington State has had a depressed economy long before the rest of the United States got hit in 2008. They had a massive dropout after the logging industry collapsed in the 90s. So they've had a very high rate of unemployment for a long time, far before, you know, their minimum wage made it up to $9.72.
What did you want to say about Maryland, Alan?
I'm sorry?
What did you want to say about Maryland? We're short of time, please.
Forgive me. A lot of the arguments that come regarding paying tip earners as well as other people that are working at the minimum wage level, which I have. My wife has, too. My wife, by the way, has a bachelor's degree and still a lot of times has a hard time finding work that isn't at minimum wage. My point with Maryland is that I at least feel from my experience in Washington that businesses are perfectly capable of succeeding, growing, and being successful with those wages in place.
Okay.
And so when I hear comments regarding, you know, how are Maryland businesses going to thrive when they're having to pay this rate, I've watched businesses thrive all throughout Washington State paying these rates for years.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments, and welcome back to Maryland. I appreciate your view on that. A quick comment, one more caller, Harry in Severna Park. Please be brief, Harry.
Hi. Concerning Martin, our governor, and his thoughts on legalization, I just think back a generation when we had a Governor Brown out in California that had presidential aspirations. And some of his thoughts, and I'm not really sure that Martin, no matter what he actually feels in his head, is a little hesitant about going too far out on that.
Oh, I see. It's all part of a calculus, is it?
I think so. I think there's something to that anyway.
Okay. Now, Governor Brown recently said that he didn't favor legalization of marijuana, the former Governor Moonbeam, because he thinks we need to be an alert country. We can't have everybody getting high. Yeah, interesting how things change. Frazier Smith, WYPR senior news analyst. You can hear him on Inside Maryland Politics, and he joins us from time to time here on Midday. Nice to have you with us again.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, Frazier, thank you very much. And thank you to Aaron Cox for covering the legislature again for the Baltimore Sun, doing a stellar job and being with us today. Thank you, Aaron.
Oh, thank you.
And please enjoy lunch. It's brought to us today by Bagby Pizza Company, located in the historic Bagby Building down at Harbor East, between Harbor East and Little Italy, and they provide some great food here for our guests, so please enjoy that. Folks, that's the first hour of midday. More politics ahead in the second hour of our show. We'll be talking about Hillary Clinton in the next hour with the authors of a new book about her. So please stay tuned for that.